Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time again for another episode of Closing the Wealth Gap. Because, well, you know what's going on out there. The rich are getting richer and the poor. And we're getting squeezed from all sides. This week we do something a little different. We let our wealth coach, Tyrone French, open up about all his frustrations about the way the system's set up. And more importantly, how so many of us think we can't change it. When all it takes is just to change the narrative in your own head. And to become more and more those in the haves and not the have-nots. Those who have the ability to make the money work for them. And not the other way around. So let's pick it up with Tyrone. As he gives us a little tirade about the world we live in and the way the system is really set up.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm good. Always looking forward to this show. You know, as we wrap up another year of Closing the Wealth Gap, I'd love to just spend a few moments and have you just riff on the real state of the world and the system that seems to work against so many of us.
You talked about the top 1% and then the 4%, which is the wealthy people, which makes up the top 5%. Then you got the 95%. There's an article in Yahoo Finance. They spelled it out. The income range for the bottom 90% has not changed in 4 decades. But the price of the cost of everything has gone up. But the income of the top 1%, 0.1%, has gone up like 160%.
It's been a straight curve since Reagan. Reagan started this. The rich started getting richer, and the poor either stayed the same or got the same. And it, not just the poor, but the middle class. The average wages have basically been stagnant for the last 20 years or so, while the growth, spectacular growth, has been this uber class, this billionaire class.
Yes.
And it's the country is not judged by, as somebody said a while ago, by how many billionaires we create, but by how many millions of people we take care of. It's not about how rich people get. You know, we now have billionaires that are worth $100 billion, $200 billion. Within our lifetime, we may see the first trillionaire. Yeah. Trillionaire. And think about this. Somebody did a number on me once. If you spent $1 million a day, I could do it a couple of days. I go buy a house, I go buy a car, I go buy a plane. Now I start to run out of things. I got to do 365 days. Every day, Tyrone, you got to go spend $1 million a day. Oh, I bought everything. No, you got to go buy some more stuff, another house, another car, another one. Your goal is to burn through $1 billion. Even if you spend $1 million a day, that's $300 million a year. Theoretically, it would take, what, 3 years to do it, but the money would keep multiplying. You'd never spend it.
You can't.
You can't spend that much money, even if you want to.
Right. It's going to grow and grow, and that's really the divide. Once you get to that point where your income, cash flow, is on autopilot, and it's in good soil, it's in good ground. The Bible says, "Everybody that has, more will be given, and they will have abundance."
Right.
But the ones that don't have, even what they have, is going to be taken away.
Yeah. Right. Think about that. That's a frightening. There's another show. There's your show right there. The frustration. It's not just anger. It's the frustration.
Frustration. That's the word.
Right.
I'm frustrated right now.
Right.
I'm getting so much information preparing for certain things and these shows and dealing with my clients and stuff. And I see that there's nothing changing. The only thing that changes are the characters, meaning that the people based on their time. And they're in this loop right now.
Right.
And their parents and their grandparents and their parents have gone through the loop. Now they're going through the loop and they think that this is normal.
Right.
And so they just behave like normal people behave. And I know that this is not normal. Mm-hmm. It's not normal. You got to break that cycle. You can acquire wealth in this country. You absolutely can do it. But the majority, the 90-95% are conditioned to just work for everybody. They're conditioned to get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. And the COVID just smashed that reality for a lot of people to say, hey, look, no, our government is set up to help the wealthy. They're not set up to help the middle class.
How much did you contribute to either campaign? Did you give $1 million? No, then I'm not going to listen to you.
That's right.
Well, I love you, Tyrone, but how much did you give me for my campaign? How much did he give me for the campaign? I think I'm listening to him.
That's right.
Because I like those checks. I like this job.
So Citizens United came in. The Supreme Court said, hey, corporations.
Are people.
Are people.
They have the same right to free speech and to give unlimited amounts of money that everybody else does here. No. No, they don't. That's a new idea.
Not only is it a new idea, but it's going to become, it's the accepted norm. Whereas the average person, if you mention Citizens United to 90% of the population, they don't know what you're talking about.
No.
It doesn't matter.
That changed. We were going through the McCain, even Republicans like McCain, not to go too far down the rabbit hole here in politics, but there was a movement within the Republican Party to reform campaign finance. And McCain led the way. Kane Feingold, Russ Feingold, Wisconsin, the Democrat, and John McCain, the Maverick from Arizona, tried to get this passed years ago. This is before Citizens United. And they said, it's just too much money in politics. All we do is spend our job raising money, more money, to get money, to save money, to make money. It's all about raising money. This is not good. And so they tried to put in a couple of things. We're going to fund the campaigns through dollar donations. But if you accept our campaign finance, then you got to limit how much you spend. And they went, I'm not going to take it. Most campaigns do not take. I don't think any of them do. We all donate, I'll donate a dollar on our taxes to fund 300 million of us to fund the election. And the candidates say, keep your money because I'm going to spend what I want. And it goes up and up and up. Obama broke the record and raised $1 billion. Trump's already raised 200 million just for losing.
He's going to keep that gravy train going.
Yeah, exactly. So what's his incentive to say, okay, I agree. The minute he agrees, the money stops coming. The minute he keeps people mad, the money keeps flowing. The system.
It goes back to that narrative. If you say something enough times, whether it's right or wrong, people will believe it.
Yeah. Supposedly that's attributed to Hitler and some other people like that. But if you lie long enough and often enough, people will believe it. And that's truly what I think. I say Republicans do it more than Democrats, but both sides do it. They say it so fast, so quick, so often. By the time you go, whoa, 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 I've slipped in 10 more on you here.
Yeah, but you're right. Both sides do it. It's so hypocritical. And everybody, they want to change the system, but they're so dug in on their side for their guy.
Yeah.
That's why it will never change.
Right.
So if you can't beat them, join them. That's where I am right now. It's the business owners and the corporations in the United States that get the benefits.
Of course.
They get all the tax breaks. If you're working stiff, a working class American.
Hardly are stiff.
You know, you can't use your work days. You can't use your sick days. You can't use your vacation days and stuff because you don't have any place. You can't afford to go anyplace.
Right.
You know, you work and work and work and work. You don't have the time to sit down and reflect on what you need to do to change your life. You get a day off, you're going to rest. You're tired. You know? Sometimes people take a week off from work, and because of we're creatures of habit, they can't even relax. No. They got to go back to work just to relax.
Yeah, that was my dad, right?
Yeah, so it's like knowing that if I'm going to work for a dollar, the first thing that comes out of my paycheck are income taxes. That means I'm working for the government maybe 3 to 4 months out of the year before I even show any kind of a profit. So the bottom line is, if I get a dollar and I got to give 25 cents of that dollar or 40 or 39 cents of that dollar to somebody else, but they'll say, hey, but there's a way that if you become an independent contractor or a small business owner, you get to keep that whole dollar. And so now that 39 cent that you were going to give to us, you can pretty much put that into your own pocket. Or invest it or make more money. And then when it comes time for us to get that 39 cents from you, you can give us legitimate reasons. Now, I'm not going to say business expenses. You can give us legitimate reasons as to why you don't have that money to give us because you benefited us in another area. And we said, okay, because we checked our playbook, which is a game. we checked the rules and said, oh yeah, okay, you can give your 39 cents to this department store, this supply company, or to this charity, so that you don't have to give it to us, because the bottom line, generating revenue from that supply company or from that charity.
And those big companies have worked the system, so they want you to either give it to the government or give it to Walmart, but don't put it in your pocket.
Yeah. You know, you said something about the guy that got the gold and he's going to bury it in his backyard.
I always remember that story, yeah.
And you know what, though? I've reflected on it. Here's the thing, though. I don't listen to the show, but I remember the things that we talk about.
It's your show today. What are we talking about today? Next.
For short. There's a lot of wisdom in that, because they were saying, I like watching these old Westerns, and I like watching History Channel and stuff. And Jesse James.
I love Westerns.
He buried a lot of his gold. That's what they did back in those days. They buried it, and they probably didn't remember where they buried it, or they got killed or something, whatever. Right. But anyway, now the property, that land is being developed, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody's digging, all of a sudden they find these coins or whatever.
Right.
You know, but the value, even though there was no interest associated with that coin, the value of the coin, I don't care if it's buried 6 feet under, the value of that coin is still going to go up. So that's the logic when people say, well, I'm just going to not put my money in a mattress, because if it's dollars, it's being devalued the longer you hold on to it. But if it's precious metals, the value of it is going up the longer you hold on to it. So you dig it up 20 years from now and it's worth more money than when you.
Because the principle of precious metals is limited. God ain't making that anymore. God ain't making any more gold or diamonds. Whatever's here is all we got. As the great Will Rogers, the humorist of the 1920s, used to say about land, why does it go up? Because God's not making that anymore.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. That used to be true until you look at the Hawaiian Islands.
Well, that's true. All right. So there's new islands being born out
that's
there.
That's right. I was watching the show again, going back to, and I like watching science programs and stuff, and they were talking about diamonds and how diamonds are formed under pressure.
Right.
Crust is so thick, and then you got this magma. Let's say if there is an eruption. That seems like, oh, God, that's terrible. This volcano just erupted. All they're waiting to do, the people are waiting for it to subside, because during that eruption, those diamonds and the metal and all that stuff comes out of the earth.
Yeah, right.
And that's why, you know, it's like even over in Africa, they were talking about the De Beers company.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating story, by the way. I mean, De Beers overnight created demand for diamonds. George Washington didn't buy Martha a diamond when they got married. Nobody did.
Right.
They created this notion that if you love me, you're going to give me this clear rock. That didn't exist until De Beers came along and got everybody sold on that idea.
And here's the kicker. The minute you buy that diamond, it's almost like buying a car. The minute you take that car off the lot, it goes down in value. So 9 times out of 10, you can't buy that diamond and take it back to the same jeweler that you bought it for a week from now and get what you paid for.
And what De Beers does to keep the profit, and there have been lots written about this, and they don't talk about it very often. If you stumble upon a diamond in Africa, they jump immediately. De Beers comes and knocks on your door and says, we want that diamond. No, I'm going to keep that. No. We don't want any diamonds floating around. We control the supply. They have giant vaults filled with diamonds that have been dug up that ain't ever going to see the light of day, not until they're ready. And they dole them out a few at a time here. That's why they were so upset in Eastern Africa, the blood diamonds, where they to fuel these revolutions. They were flooding the market with diamonds, and they're ruining the price of diamonds here.
Right.
The Beers wants to buy them all. They have a complete monopoly in the world, and the Russians, too, to a certain degree. And they store this stuff. There are massive vaults of diamonds that they don't ever want to flood in the market because it would kill the price.
You know, but it's no different as far as grain silos.
Yeah, right.
There's no different as far as milk vats. They would rather burn that grain and pour that milk out.
They're doing it today. Killing pigs, and they're killing and pouring milk down drains that could feed starving people around the world. Because the restaurants are down, and all the stuff. So I'm not going to sell this stuff. I'll throw it in the ground. I'll kill the pig. And
horrible. But that's man, that's capitalism. Yeah, that is capitalism.
Right. Exactly. So you can either complain about it or you can say, come up with something better. And to date, we haven't come up with anything better. So we keep trying to put some limits on it. We keep trying to tweak it and set some ground rules to it, what you can and can't do. And every so often somebody comes along and creates a whole new idea, like Rockefeller did in the 1920s when he bought up all the oil companies and turned them into one company, Standard Oil. And he controlled 99% of the oil in the world. One man. He would be worth today, the last figure I saw was $700 million. He'd make Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos look like paupers. And that's when they started writing all these rules about, I never thought, what if somebody buys up all the companies? We got to have some way to break up these monopolies.
Right. Yeah.
He's the one that invented that trick. And they keep derivatives a few years ago that created that nobody ever came. Somebody, wise guy, comes up with some new thing, and it creates havoc in the market. And then they say, all right, well, it's a free market, except, no, you can't do that. I'm sorry, that's out. And we start creating more and more rules to it. And then the next generation comes along and says, roll back all the rules. I don't want environmental rules. I don't want any rules.
Because they forget. It's like, look at what happened. The stock market crashed in 1929. 1933, they came out with Glass-Steagall.
Right.
Limit the reforms.
Right.
They put regulation on the banks.
We don't ever want this to happen again. Right.
Don't want it to happen again. Then all of a sudden, here comes Bill Clinton, you know, trying to appease, you know, the Republicans. And we're going to roll back these regulations.
Yeah.
Now the banking, Wall Street married with Main Street. And now, you know,
too big to fail.
Crash. Too big to fail. And then you got 2007, 2008. And the cycle repeats itself all over again. And who does it benefit? The wealthy.
My great-grandmother came from Poland. She lived in Pittsburgh because Poles are mining people. She went there. She and her first husband went to Pittsburgh. And that was in 1910, maybe, 1905, early 1900s. And Pittsburgh, you couldn't see the sky, morning, noon, or night.
Right.
They're burning this coal and the steel factories that are making Carnegie and Mellon.
Right.
The first millionaires we've ever seen. U.S. Steel was the first company ever to have a gross $1 billion. Nobody had ever done that before.
Right.
All of this at the expense that you couldn't see the sun 300 days out of the year in Pittsburgh. So we moved to Pittsburgh in 1970. My great-grandmother was still alive. 70 years had gone by. She didn't know they'd cleaned it up. She didn't speak English. Mm. She didn't read English. She didn't know that much was going on. And my dad had to tell her, we're leaving Detroit, and we're going to Pittsburgh. And she burst out crying. She said, oh, my God,
wow.
Not that place. He said, Grandma, it's not that bad. Oh, don't tell me. I was there. It's bad, you know, because we forgot. And now they're trying to roll back the environmental regulations in L.A. and everywhere here. I remember what it was like, and then it's the 1980s here. It was not good. Smog alerts and stuff here. We're going to go back to that?
Remember the acid rain?
Acid rain, and we're pouring, can't eat the fish because we're pouring DDT in the
That's
oceans
right.
and stuff.
The mercury, yeah. And man, it used to be a time when, remember the bird droppings would get on your car and it would literally eat through your paint?
Yeah, right. Under the great Donald Trump to make America great again, he rolled back all these environmental things. You can have more pollution, more mercury, more stuff again here. We wanted to drill in the ocean. I'm like, really? We forgot it was 50 years ago. We forgot what that was. Why we did that? That wasn't some kooky idea. It's because they were killing us.
Yeah. And the beat goes on. The Whisperers wrote this song called And the Beat Goes On.
Yeah.
Round and round, on and on.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, same old game. But just if you look at the Lakers franchise, right. You'll look at the players today and, you know, now all the names are different. But the franchise is still the same.
And I grew up in Detroit, which had the Detroit Lions, which is only one of two football teams that has never even been to the Super Bowl, much less won a Super Bowl. The other one's the Cleveland Browns. Another one's been there forever. And year in and year out, they say, this is the year. This is the year. Now, they had the same ownership.
Keep hope alive.
Keep hope alive. And everybody would go to the Superdome, Silverdome, or whatever it was called, and we'd all pack and watch the stupid Lions lose one more season, one more year, one more time. And to this day, 50 years later, How many championships have they won? Zero.
Zero.
How many championships have the New York Yankees or the LA Lakers or the Boston Celtics won? Lots. The Cowboys, I mean, there's certain built-in organizations that know how to do this, and some just don't get it ever.
No. But some, I mean, it's a business. Some teams, they want to win a Super Bowl. They want to win a championship. Where others, it's a business. They just want to turn a profit.
The Clippers, the guy that owned the Clippers, used to famously say, I don't want to win. I just want to. When he sold the team, he owned the stadium. He had zero debt, paid players big salaries. He didn't win any games, but he didn't have any debt. And when he sold it, he sold it for $2 billion.
That's right. Arsenio Hall used to make this joke about the Clippers. Like, if you sit close enough to the front row, they may ask you to play.
Yeah, right. But people went, and the hope lived on, and he refused to pay the salaries or do anything else. And everybody cursed him. And when he left, he sold it for the record number to Bill Gates' partner, Ballmer, for $2 billion.
He had the leverage because they wanted him out.
Everybody wanted him out, and Ballmer wanted in real bad.
Yeah.
He wanted in.
And he had the money. It was no big deal. He had the money.
One, two, I don't know. What do I got? 100? I don't know. One, two, three, what do you want? I don't know. Doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything. It's like you said, you gotta spend it. It's like, man, I still haven't spent enough money. Let me raise the salary of these players, you know. Let me create another market, you know, meaning that now I'm advertising more, spending more dollars. The money that you have is going to make money. And the government is like, you got all these buckets, all these piles of money. And this is where cryptocurrency comes in.
Yeah, cryptocurrency is a fascinating world. Is it funny money or is it the new reality? I don't know.
Well, it's going to crash just like everything else. They're going to regulate it just like everything else. But right now, cryptocurrency is good for two things. It's good for gangsters, mobsters, cartels.
Right.
Yeah. And it's good. If you're going to invest in cryptocurrency, you should do it as an IRA. You shouldn't do it as just, you know, hey, I'm going to buy Bitcoin. And now my Bitcoin is selling for $23,000 a coin.
Right.
And so now everybody wants to get into Bitcoin. I got clients calling me, telling me, hey, you know, what about Bitcoin? It's like, but you have debt.
All right,
it's better for you to pay off your debt than to try to, because again, you're buying high.
Right.
The 90% of the consumers buy high
and sell low.
And so right now, the people that made their money in cryptocurrency, they waited till it got down to 1,000 or 1,500 or 2,000. They started buying. Then the price started going up and they started selling. That started driving the price up. It started driving it up. So now the ones that they already made their money, they're not going to lose anything. They've already made their money. Mm-hmm. So now the price is going to go up, 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 up. The average person that can't afford it is going to invest. The price is going to start going down. They're going to start pulling all their money out. And it's just going to keep on dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping. They're going to lose their shirts. And then when it gets back down to maybe, I don't think it'll go back down to like 1,500. When it gets down to like maybe 4,000, then the investors will come back in and start buying again.
So what's your question? That's the answer. We know how the system works. So why are you frustrated? You got three choices. You can bitch about it. You can not play the game and say, I'm not going to play then. I don't like the rules. Or you can play by the rules and...
Like I said, if you can't beat them, join them. So play the game, play it by the rules, meaning that you understand what the IRS... The tax code, that's the playbook.
Right.
That's the playbook. And they're the referees. So as long as you're playing by the rules and you understand how the game is being, you know, what it's designed to do, and you're playing within the confines of that playbook, they'll let you make as much money as you want to make.
That is so true. That really is the point of today's show and this series in general called Closing the Wealth Gap. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.